but other men have elected to view the whale as an essential component of an expanding economy. When an underwater shape is detected on the submarine radar, catcher boats are dispatched from the factory ship. The harpoon on the raised foredeck is manned and swiveled in the direction of the whale. As the whale comes within range, the engine's screw is slowed down and then silenced. An accurate shot lands between the shoulder blades. An inaccurate shot is followed up by two, three, or four more. At the end of the 5-foot-long steel harpoon, a small serrated cup prevents ricochet. The tip strikes, followed by a time-fused charge exploding 3 seconds later, splintering and lacerating the harpoon's way into the whale's side. Next to the grenade, 4 barbed flanges pivot on hinges, and as the whale struggles, the strain on the rope snaps the barbs open. They fly out, ripping into the lungs and inner organs, embedding the harpoon inside the whale, anchoring her body. The whale clashes her jaws together, pants, flurries, and spurts blood raspingly through her blowhole. She thrashes her tail against the surface, strenuously heaving at the 6-inch thick nylon line attached to accumulator springs in the catcher boat's hold, designed to buffer every move. 20 minutes pass. The whale's ribs become too heavy to move. The whale's rib muscles give up their strength. The air valves collapse, admitting a rush of seawater. The whale's lungs flood. She suffocates and dies, revolving slowly in the water, leaving her white stomach exposed. A hollow lance attached to an airline is fired at her upturned belly, feeding compressed air into her corpse to inflate it and keep it afloat. An identifying flag with a radar reflector and the catcher boat's number is lobbed into her. She is left to drift, rimmed with oil slick and blood. With no enemies in the sea, the whale is loath to believe in the attack, as were the Indians, as were the Aborigines. The factory ship, large as an aircraft carrier, with the capacity to deal with a whale every 30 minutes, draws alongside. A hole is bored into the nearest end of her body, lips or tail. A tow line is attached, and she is hauled to the bottom of the ramp. A set of moving claws is lowered towards her. The hawser wire is pulled. The curved fingers of the metal tongs bite. The whale is inched up the slope onto the flensing deck. Wearing spiked plates on their boots to pin themselves to the body, the flensing crew armed with long-handled knives, slice into the whale, scoring huge straps, 18 inches wide and 10 feet long. Wires are looped around the ends of the loose flesh, and winches tear it from the whale's side. The whale is stuffed through manholes, to be carved into a sodden mess by whirring knives that lie below in rotating drums. The minced flesh is shunted into digestive tanks and boiled down for 4 hours by superheated steam. The solid residue is dried and bagged up. The oil is piped into the separator house, double boiled, centrifuged, hardened into edible fats, graded into half a dozen categories, barreled and stored. On deck, the skull, jawbones, ribs, spine and pelvis are dismembered with chainsaws, then ground down and shoveled into the bone cookers, melted and milled into chicken feed and fertilizers. From a whale who was pregnant, the unborn are dragged into the meat boilers with huge hooks slung into their blowholes. The inner organs are towed into other boilers to be distilled into pharmaceuticals. The skin is collected from the slipways for glycerin. The belly blubber is reserved for a delicacy known as whale bacon. The jaw cartilage is pickled. The tail flukes are frozen to be eaten raw. The floating factory has done little but exchange 20,000 gallons of petroleum for 20,000 gallons of animal oil. Foreign currency has been acquired.